start stand-up?
I started at the Funny Bone Comedy Club in Arlington, Texas, which is very prestigious.
Yes, it sounds it.
Yeah.
Is it really? The way you said
I can just rattle off the list of comics that are great comics that are from there.
Some of the best, right? Yeah. Isn't that Kinnison, Arlington?
Well, no.
All right, maybe not.
Hicks wasn't from there either, and neither
Hicks.
Was Steve Martin.
None.
No, he wasn't there.
Who else was there? Just Ron White?
Are you a Bill Hicks guy? Did you think he was funny?
Fuck yeah, I thought he was the shit. I mean, there are two kinds of comics, in my opinion. Bridge builders and bridge walkers, and he was a bridge builder, and there weren't very many.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure.
That's great. That's a great way to say it. That's yeah.
I'm a bridge burner.
Definitely.
That's good.
I got a lot of matches.
As soon as I see the bridge being built, I start it on fire and make sure that I can never cross it.
Saboteur.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this is the Comedy Store Podcast. I'm Eleanor Kerrigan. This is Rick Ingram.
Yep.
And we are here with the great Ron White.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fantastic having you, Ron.
Thank you. This
is a big deal for us. I know I got in trouble for saying my favorite comic, and I was talking about Doug Stanhope. But that's only because I didn't see you sitting there. I would have said it about
you. I was about
you.
To get up like the guy on Zoolander. My favorite comic. And I was like... Doug Stanhope.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, fuck, Doug.
Fuck, Doug.
Better than me.
But it's just I know him, like, because I was a waitress here for so long. So Doug was kind of starting out here. I watched him showcase for Mitzi. You know, it was like a big deal, so we became good friends. When did you showcase here?
I never did.
You never showcased
here? You know what? First time I came to L.A., I came to the store, and... And they put me on first, and I didn't think they'd put me on at all because I'd been hanging out at the Improv, and they wouldn't put me on at all. And so I came here, and they put me on first. I guess it must have been a Monday night because they wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
And there was nobody in there. And
of course not.
And
what year is this?
God, you know, must have been 90.
So early
90, right around 90.
Early 90s. Okay.
90. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Then there was nobody there to laugh at it, and the ones that were there didn't. So it was a horrible fucking experience. And
that sounds like the original.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, that was the first 8 years I was here, and I showed up around 2000, and it was terrible every night for a solid decade.
Yeah, we had
it's a lot better
years
now
here,
but it was pretty tough.
Thanks to you guys coming, I think. Like the Joe Rogans, the Ron Whites, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You guys
Mark
coming
Maron,
in, Mark Maron, everybody coming and just coming back and doing it and getting involved. It's like a whole new place.
When you started coming here recently, did they reach out to you and ask you to come? Or did you ask if you could start performing here? And they were basically like, obviously, you're welcome.
Yeah. I just told them I was coming in doing a set, and they didn't stop me. That's kind of what
that's
it
awesome.
Was. So
that's where you're
I,
at.
Quite frankly, I never understood how this place worked.
Yeah.
Until I tried to get a comedian on here, Josh Blue, and they said no.
Oh, love
and I'm
him.
Like, oh well, really? One of the best comics? Now? You don't
really?
Want to give him time? And they fucking drew a line in the sand. I'm like, okay, because there's a couple other comedy clubs in town that would love to have him on, and they'd love to have me on too. So
yeah.
And so I had to fucking pressure him into letting fucking Josh Blue on the stage. And I'm like, I've seen some of your acts that are pretty fucking tired. I mean, you have is there a cutoff point to the pass?
Yeah.
Is there a point where you just...
Look, if you sleep with the owner, they will let you perform 9:15 forever.
Okay. That's one guy.
That's one guy.
There's a couple others that got washed away. But that was the thing. Mitzi was very controlling.
I could trim some fat out of it. They should have to re-audition, like getting a fucking license or something.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. After a certain amount of time, because even when I started waiting
some
tables,
of them even had a good set 2 years ago, and we should probably re-look at them.
Oh,
and cut
yeah,
them.
That's true.
I mean, I'm a huge hater, so
that's true.
It gets tough. I can make it through. There's about 7 comics at the Comedy Store out of the 50
are
that
you serious?
Regularly perform here. That
you
I think
should have seen the guy that hosted the night at the Improv. I just came there.
He tough,
fucking sucked. I mean, he was
how
the
did
host.
They get the gig? Oh, I guess because he's the host.
He was the
host,
so he went up there and he wasn't funny at all. He said he wasn't going to be funny, and then he wasn't. And he did all the announcements that were just done on that fucking film.
Right.
Yeah. And then he talked about that, but he wasn't funny. And then he said he wasn't going to be funny. And it wasn't his job to be funny. And then he wasn't funny. And then he did a couple of things at the end that got a little bit of a laugh. And he goes, here's Ron White. And I went up there and I said, listen, I've been doing this 30 years. And if you're hosting a show, it's okay to be funny from the very fucking beginning, dude. Very yeah. fucking beginning.
You got to warm up the audience. Yeah, that's your fucking job.
So
the improv is interesting. And I don't get a lot of spots there. But every time I'm there, I'm amazed that they'll basically do two professional comedians per show. And then it seems like four or five just amateurs Whatever. Can be. Usually it's someone who books the show and they're doing time and bombing.
They do have a lot of bringer shows.
Yeah.
Like tonight was Comedy Juice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've done that one. I can't believe the host just doesn't. If I host, I get so nervous.
It was unbelievable. Harlan Williams and I were over there just looking at each other going, what the fuck is this? And they had to move me to second so I could make it over here.
Right, right.
And so I'm following, or first, I was the first comic. And so I had to follow the host. Guy.
Oh, shit. And, so you had to go fix it.
We appreciate
you basically had to host the show and open the show.
I definitely had to open the show. And then I asked him, could you have him do 12 minutes instead of 8 if I'm going to go up first? But I didn't know it was going to be more minutes of that shit. I would have fucking, Jesus Christ.
Cut him at 4?
Yeah.
He's bombing.
Bring
him put
down.
Anyone
Take
from the
off.
Audience in there?
What
Something.
Keeps him from fucking killing himself? And he's also arrogant. And
that's the thing I don't get.
I wonder
people
who
that,
it was.
I think he had a television credit or something. He's a squirrely guy, nicely dressed, glasses, short hair. I think he hosted every week.
He was probably on Comedy Central once, like 20 years ago, and they gave him.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's all right. We don't have to say his name.
I wish we could. I wish we could.
I guess you're right. We should.
When you start talking about him bad in the back of the room, everybody agrees.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make sense to me. When you host, that's you have to warm up the audience. And people have said that, like, oh, there's a host that actually warms up the audience. Like because I guess they're used to that kind of shit where the guy
right.
just...
You know, he tried to vibe me when he came on stage because I said something to him. And I'm like, it would be worth it for me to stay here until he came off stage and school this little motherfucker.
Yeah.
And,
it would have been shit
in his fucking pants, but I was running late, so I didn't do it.
Oh man, but, you should do that to everyone.
Yeah, I was gonna say that should be a TV show. Actually,
yeah,
it's just
that's good.
Ron schools the comedy youth.
Fucker. But my thing is, like, with the older comics, like you're saying, when you came here, isn't there a limit to get these people? Sometimes they had like 20 minutes. And that was it.
Forever.
Like, so they're just doing that same
20 minutes. And yeah. I remember one time we were going to maybe have to stretch. And I grabbed the manager and I'm like, hey, man, we got to get, what are we going to do? There's nobody here. We got to get another comic. And they were like, somebody said, yeah, let him stretch. And the manager goes, what's he going to do? Start over?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was so funny, but it's true.
Well, it's an odd policy. And But they don't even, you know, and I heard that they even enforced that with Dane Cook, and they said, Dane, there's a process here.
Yeah.
But they didn't do it to me.
Yeah.
So
there is a process.
Because they know that I'm, I fit here.
Yeah.
This is where I should be.
Absolutely.
And there's also a level, like, I have yet to meet anyone that doesn't like you or respect you as a comic,
exactly.
Where everyone dislikes him. Dane's one of those people that's made so many enemies over the years.
He's had some issues, yeah.
Like, they just know if they bring him in, even on the rare chance that he does his time and all that, there's going to be comics that won't come here
because
he's got a reputation as he steals jokes or whatever it is.
Right.
He was an ass to him, whatever.
But isn't his stock way down anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he would have wanted to be here 9-10 years ago, they would have been glad to have him.
Yeah,
but still, even if your stock goes down, if you're still a good comic and you're still like a likable person, people still accept you more. You know what I mean? Like everybody, I think everybody goes up and down, don't you? Or is that just terrible?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
No,
that's
true.
Sometimes if you're just a dick of a person,
yeah, right.
You get treated that way. You can't treat
right.
people like that on the way up because on the way down, it's harsh.
I went down there to do a set. This was probably 2-3 years ago, and I was going to do a 4-minute set and just for television. I just wanted to run this set.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And the guy goes, yeah, but you're going to have to go after a day. And I said, well, that's, I don't give a shit. Whatever. He does an hour.
I was
going to
say, what are you doing?
Minutes,
yeah.
And so as soon as he gets off, everybody gets up to piss. Here's Ron White, and the tabs come out. And
right.
And I had a little chat with the owner down there, and
this is at the factory.
Yeah. And so I just won't go there. You know, I won't go there.
Yeah, because
then I heard he was banned from there, which made me, you know, I feel sorry for the guy. You know, and I tell young comics that rag on him. I say, well, you know, nobody has better stage presence than he does. I mean, that's can learn true. A lot watching Dane work.
Absolutely.
And so I don't know about the ceiling. I don't know, but you.
Yeah, I mean, that's just what people say about him.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't watch his comedy enough to know, but
he is a performer. This is truth, and he knows I said this, and this is why he doesn't like me. I used to have albums on the charts too, and every one of them have gone to number one.
Yeah.
And so I watch them. And but his first album went to fucking blew by a man like a rocket ship. I was like number one for a day, and then I was just like, God damn, who is this guy?
Yeah.
I had no idea. And so then one day I'm at a bookstore and going through the CDs, and I see it, and I bought it. And I listened to it on the way home. I got home, I opened the trash can, threw it in it. Because I don't collect shit that I don't need.
Right, you're not going to listen to it again.
Right, I wasn't
going to
listen to it again. I said, okay, that's what it was. It's nothing. And so that's now he's got some big bug up his ass.
Well, he was
because he didn't cherish his album.
Yeah,
he was like a MySpace, like you know, yeah. YouTubers kind of thing. He was like the first of that kind. So
he
that's
was.
Like pioneerish
yeah, very,
for
very,
him.
Yeah,
and right. then I mean, I tour with Andrew Dice Clay, and so has Rick. And the thing is, he tore past all of them. Like he was doing Madison Square Garden. You know what I mean? So at first, Dice was like, oh, who is this guy? But, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, you get knocked down, there's always somebody else. There's always somebody
in
line.
My flame burnt slow.
Yeah.
For a long fucking time. Dude. And that's a good kind of flame to have, you know.
Yeah,
I was doing
stand up
16 years and nobody had any idea. I couldn't sell 40 tickets in Austin.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
thank God.
That
gives me hope.
Me. Yeah.
yeah. So, and then there has to be a catalyst that makes you famous. Something's got to happen or you're not going to be famous. Something's got to fucking happen. So for me, it was Blue Collar.
Right.
Which is so great. Foxworthy. All you guys are so great. Yeah.
It's a, you know, that was a biggest tour ever in the history of comedy.
Yeah.
And but anyway, that's what did it for me, and that's what changed it, you know, my path. Now, luckily, because I'd been doing stand-up for 16 years, I had a fucking powerful hour and a half
right?
to fucking back it up with.
Yeah.
So I only did 10 minutes in the first Blue Collar album, and then I told the Tater Salad story, which is 8 minutes. So I saw this coming too. I saw it setting up. I said, I'm about to get famous off of 18 minutes of comedy. And
yes.
most people burn an hour when they fucking do it. And
right
they don't
away.
Have another hour. So
yeah.
they're going to tour with that fucking hour that they already know. And I thought, fuck, man, if this really works, I'm going to have this big old fucking hunk of shit they've never heard to tour with. And
yeah.
That's exactly what went down.
You're not going to, yeah, that's great.
Sold 4 million records and copies of the DVD. And those go to fucking 100 million people. Comedy spreads like wildfire, and that was the biggest selling comedy album ever, or DVD or whatever.
Yeah,
the biggest selling one ever.
Wow.
And it was really weird, and I never even considered it. I never considered being famous. I never considered being real popular. I was okay with being a club comic.
Like you were okay with just touring regular?
Yeah,
okay.
I liked it. That's really what my goal was. My goal was never to get famous because that kind of shit doesn't happen to me. And I didn't seem like that I was putting that much effort into it, really.
But you tell the best stories. You have like the best stories. That's what I love to watch. And that's why so I think you're terrific with that. And so, like I was gonna, we were gonna. My whole thing was to ask you how your showcase was here. Like, what story did you tell? And now I don't have one.
It was a 90.
I was like, damn, he didn't showcase.
Well, somebody they called me from Men's Journal magazine, and this guy, they said that they wanted to. They're doing a segment on storytelling, and they wanted to talk to me. So they call it. The guy goes, okay, let's say somebody has a story, but they really want to make it better. What would you tell them? And I said, I'd tell them to have me tell it.
Yes.
That would be the easiest way to do it.
Yeah,
it
would that'll
take forever for me to teach them how to do what I do.
That'll help
the subtleties of it. It's really harder than it looks. And there's punchlines written into jokes inside of stories. It's
right.
Not, It's, I'm not just up there jabbering. It's comedy. So it's just written in long form. That's all.
I remember the first time, I think the tater salad was the first thing I ever heard. A buddy of mine who's from Dallas was talking to me, asked me if I'd heard or seen the blue collar thing. And I said, nah, I don't know that that's really for me. And he was saying, "What? You're from Kansas?
Yeah.
Of course, that's for you." I said, "I don't like any comedy." That's what I kept saying. So I was like, "I don't want to hear any comedy."
Right.
And he sent me a clip, and I'm like, "All right, I'll watch it." And it was just you. And he said, "This is the guy from the Blue Collar Comedy Tour that I like." And I was just like, "All right, man." And this dude, good enough guy, but kind of a jackass. So I was like, "There's no way I'm gonna like whatever he sends me." But then I watched it, and I was like, "God damn it! Now I have to admit that he's right." I have to tell him, your opinion was good. I'm sorry. I told you you're an asshole. And from there, I saw some of the other stuff. But you were definitely the strongest out of those guys. I think that's probably a pretty common opinion.
That's an extremely common opinion.
It's a common opinion of comics, but not the general public, as they have their favorites. And I'm one of them. And sometimes, you know, Larry the Cable Guy, Dan Whitney is a huge comedian.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, now he's just kind of getting tired of it and doing he makes so much money off of Prilosec, he'll never have
to
worry.
That's hilarious. When I see those commercials,
it's perfect fit. Yeah. Because his fans eat the worst shit there is on the planet. You know, they're just like him. And
that's perfect. I can't
even think of anything more perfect than that. He makes a fucking fortune off of it.
I'm surprised. I know he's made a couple movies, but I thought he would go like full on, like Ernest, Jim Varney style.
Like
make a bunch
really
of movies about
it.
But like you said, he might have just been like, I don't want to do this. I'm so rich.
Well, the ones he did were bad, but I don't know.
Do you keep in touch with those guys at all?
Oh, yeah. They're friends of mine. They do blue collar they do a tour without me, but they don't call it blue collars. And I have so much respect for them for that, because it's not the blue collar tour.
It's not the same thing. Yeah. Absolutely.
And then the blue collar tour started adding people. It was going for a little bit, because our buddy John Reap did it for a while too. Didn't he?
They were doing it under Them Idiots World Tour or something that.
Shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But their biggest question when anywhere they went was, where's Ron White? And because they just assumed I was going to be with them.
Be part of the crew.
And then they're going to get, some young
comic
and basically he's just the opening act for the show.
Yeah.
Right. Because none of them want it. Right. That'd be terrible if one of them
had
to open.
Nobody wants to take that bullet. You had to take a bullet tonight.
And now we can recommend this guy at the Improv to maybe get him on the...
Let him warm him up.
He'll do a killer job. Who was your influence comedy wise, if you had one?
Because I was such a fan of comedy in the 60s, because I owned everything and listened to it constantly. Started with, we had a fucking Andy Griffith record in our house. Bob Newhart.
He's
Flip
my
Wilson,
favorite. Bob Newhart. He's up there.
And all of Cosby and all of Pryor. And later on, we didn't have Pryor in my house, but my buddy's divorced dad had a Pryor album.
Yeah.
We went down there and fucking
there
listened to it.
That's how I found out who Dice was.
Yeah.
All right.
Divorced dad?
The crazy dad who's trying to be cool.
Yeah.
He's like, you got to listen to this. I didn't understand half of what he was talking about because I was like 9, but I knew that some of the words you shouldn't say, and therefore it must be great.
Yeah. I loved Pryor. My brothers would play it in the basement because I have 6 brothers, and they would hide it in the basement. But I was the youngest, so they would make me go upstairs to check, make sure my mom wasn't coming, because it was like a row home, so you couldn't get away with a lot.
Right.
And then I'd learn all these words that Pryor was saying. I was like, oh, this is awesome. And then my brother would say, go upstairs and say that to mommy. And then he'd just hear me get smacked.
Right.
Because I couldn't rat on them. But yeah, that's so you liked all those guys.
Probably Hicks probably had the most influence.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the one I was mesmerized by. And, I don't think I'm anything like him or anywhere close to him.
I feel like he was way ahead of his time.
He was.
If you listen to his bits, they fit
today. They're so relevant. But I, it all did. And then also my uncle was a preacher, and I loved to watch him preach, and he was funny. And And I loved to go to church when I was a kid because I would just watch my uncle.
He would make it funny, throw like, down,
yeah,
wow,
saving souls and shit at the same time.
Relatable to the Lord. That's crazy.
And all my relatives will tell you that I have his pace.
Yeah.
On stage. And
that's
great.
Awesome. That's kind of a Kinnison
thing
too.
Yeah, that's a big Kinnison.
He's preacher
Rock too.
Yeah.
I think it's fairly. I don't think that's all that uncommon.
Right.
Yeah, that's funny.
I mean, it's a form of public speaking that you can really connect with people.
He's an amazing orator. He eventually became the president of the Southern Baptist Convention, and he's got 3 doctorates. Dr. Charles Pollard, he's still alive.
Wow. You get people to empty their pockets like that's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm scared of that.
He did.
That's my mom. She goes to church just to give all her money away. I'm like, whatever, lady. I thought we were going to save some for us. Giving it to him.
Yeah.
That's how it goes, man. When you have a good one, my mom's like, oh, you'll love this priest. He's so funny. I'm like, there's no funny priest. Like, who's making funny?
My uncle was good.
But
man,
obviously there is.
And then when we moved away and went to another church, and it fucking sucked, and I hated it.
Yeah, you're like, this isn't entertaining. Like,
I'm going to go outside and smoke cigarettes. You're 12. I don't care. I'm not going to do this, that's for sure.
My soul is not being touched, but I will get pure satisfaction.
I will sell it for something different.
So you started in Texas. Did you basically tour in Texas for a while, or how long were you just doing comedy before you started actually getting at, like, on the road?
Not really all that long, because there were 4 comedy clubs in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I figured out really early that it really mattered if you were a good host, and that guy hasn't figured out.
I don't understand that.
But if you learned the announcements and learned everybody's name and really did it like you're, you know, like a
professional,
like a professional, that they would overlook the fact that you were medium funny,
right? Because you're starting out, and
so I was working just about all the time, and then I would also go around to these restaurants and stuff and tell them to do a comedy competition and have the first place be a meal for 2, and then I would only tell comics I knew that I was funnier than, and I would win the food, and I would fucking eat it too. And
you really are like your uncle.
Yeah,
you got
right.
That's
you
a
got
genius
that
plan.
I got it.
I'm sitting here thinking,
scamming.
That is genius.
That is amazing. Yeah.
I was so hungry when I started, and I just didn't have the know-how.
Yeah, if we knew about the restaurants. Damn.
But anything to get stage time, you know.
Right.
So I was getting a lot of fucking stage time. 9 shows a week, almost every week, and
that's great.
Paid or not? Obviously, I mean, unless you won
paid,
the food.
Making $300 a week.
Wow,
that's awesome.
And the comedy clubs. Yeah, you guys live in hell out here.
Yeah, it's
no
awful
way.
In LA.
You know what? This for
New York
for
is
the
better.
First time ever. They gave me $35 tonight at the Improv for doing a set, and I said, "Give it to the waitresses." I don't
good know. For you. Yeah, I was gonna say, don't you feel special?
That's cute. That's really
you.
Cute.
They get,
I don't work for $35. It's either free or way more.
Yeah.
I did a terrible show there like a month and a half ago. It's like they called me, "Oh, so and so canceled. You want to come do the late show on Friday?" I'm thinking it's Friday. Why not? So I get there, and there was like 8 people there. And after when I walked off stage, I was just like, "Well, it's terrible, whatever." Work some stuff out and leave. And I'm walking out. The guy's like, "Do you want your money now?" I'm like, "Oh, sure." And he gave me $6.
Yes.
I was like, "What?
I've
why would you? Why would you even tell me?
$6?
All crumpled up ones.
Yeah. You can't even get a drink with that. $6.
It was terrible.
Right? Yeah.
That's
you're gonna have
great.
To go somewhere else with your $6. Sure.
I was talking to Stanhope. He did the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he was saying, I was like, "Are you gonna go on in the original room? You know, upstairs?" He's like, "No. Why would I do that? I'm not gonna go up and lose my confidence in front of not my audience." Do you feel that way ever performing up there? I mean, because your name's on the marquee tonight, right?
I don't know.
You don't even know. No. But your name's on the list, so some of your fans probably showed up.
I mean, you seem like you just want, like performing, regardless.
I like to do stand-up, but it's... But no, and I don't care. You know what? I like to be uncomfortable.
There you go.
I don't mind being uncomfortable, because I do these big old padded shows every weekend. I've got... My average crowd size is 2,500 people.
Holy shit.
And great. And then there are people that paid big money
right.
just to listen to me talk. Yeah. So, and I work hard on my act all the time. And so I'm ready to punch him in the mouth, and that's what they want, and that's what I do.
Yeah.
And it's easy. So to get in a little different situation where they're not my fans, to test out the material, see how it still works with them, that's fun for me to do. And
I agree with that. I like that, because I think it's hard to go up in front of, I mean, it's good to go up in front of people that may or may not be your fans, but then you win them over, and now they are your fans. Like, they didn't know who they were coming to see. They were just...
And it is, it's a realer test, I guess. Like, the Stanhope's thing was saying, like, he just wants it to be easy.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like, my fans, they come to see me. Yeah. They are going to like whatever I say. I don't want to have to go work to get people to laugh.
Right.
Which, you know, I guess that's a prerogative, but...
I
understand what he's saying, because his comedy's never been universally applauded.
Yeah.
Accepted. Yeah. So he was always looking for the underground
guy. The niche audience.
Yeah, niche audience, and he found him.
He definitely has a niche audience.
So I get it. I totally get it. So why go try to do his brand of comic for a straight, uptight fucking crowd? You know, they're, you know.
It's going to be tougher, yeah.
Do you write all your own material?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. I like that.
I mean, well, that, you know, all my friends are comics, so they all help. I'll do bits outside just so the young comics will fucking write tags for it. So, you know, that's
oh, yeah.
That's smart.
Sometimes people come up, they're like, hey, I have a tag for it. I'm like, yeah, what is it? Sometimes people are like, oh, you don't mind taking it? I'm like, I don't give a shit. I'll take it.
No, I'll solicit it, you know. Yeah. And I've gotten some great tags, too, out of... somebody wrote something for my baby duck pussy lip taco night thing.
Okay. And, I like that.
Well, I think we all have a tag for that.
It's brand new. So
I don't have a tag for it. I was just hoping it could be my Twitter handle. Yeah. That's an
baby
amazing.
Baby duck pussy lip taco. Yeah.
Now, and you have tequila as well?
Yeah, but tequila. Yeah, number one tequila.
That's awesome. Number one.
What do you mean? Like, it's your tequila? Mm-hmm. Like, you have your own? Oh, okay.
I have a brand.
I was looking. I'm like, he's drinking tequila.
He's like, you want tequila? I was like, oh shit, I'm afraid of tequila. I get wild when I do tequila. Oh.
What got you into owning a tequila company?
That's yet to be determined. But it'll probably end up being an extremely smart thing. And,
yeah.
I'll probably make more money off of that than I do ever did off of comedy if we keep going in the direction we're going, because people are already talking about buying us, because our juice is just so amazingly fucking good.
That's what awesome. Everybody was saying. You know, they the were best. Like, oh my God, it's, this is so you know, good. You have to try it.
Tastes like dirt compared to ours.
Yeah.
We've won in 3 years until we quit doing it. We used to enter the competitions, and we've won 2 bronze medals, 2 silver medals, 9 gold medals. Wow. And our extra Yeho has never been in a competition that didn't win the gold medal. And was named by Nexus Magazine, had this big spread on tequila and gathered all the experts. And it was named one of the top 5 tequilas in the world, the only one under $300. And it's $79.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow.
So that's and it was fun. But the way we did it, my wife's a Mexican immigrant, and so was her brother. And so they still have, you know, connections in Mexico. And one of my brother-in-law's friends, that found this distillery and had been drinking it for a long time. And Alex went up there to see him, and he said, "You got to taste this tequila."
Wow!
And so he brought back 2 bottles of it. This was probably 10 years ago, and which is all he can bring back. And he brought it to me, and I was like, "Motherfucker, are you kidding me?"
Yeah,
drinkable tequila.
So. Years later, he started talking to the Rebescas family to make it. Mm. He asked, where do I get this in the United States? What's it called in the United States? And they go, it's not in the United States. We've never been there.
Wow.
It's called Gift of God in Mexico. So it's distributed and made by them. They farm their own. They have 1,000 acres of agave. They farm their own agave. And it's a little distillery. And it's also the ugliest, dustiest distillery in all of fucking Mexico.
That's
like
amazing.
Nearly dead dogs laying around and fat people in dirty shirts and shit. And
so
I didn't even want to go in. I was like, fuck, man.
Can I own from out here? Is that possible? Yeah.
But he goes, this is where it's made, man. They took us in there, put it straight out of a keg. Into a bottle with, I don't think it was clean.
The alcohol will kill it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's the shit, dude.
That's what makes it taste good, too, I think.
Are you a tequila drinker?
Like, yeah, being like, huh? Just because.
Are you a tequila drinker?
Yeah, it's all I drink.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you used scotch to drink scotch, right?
Yeah,
okay, yeah.
For years and years.
I'm a Jameson
but
girl. Yeah.
When that extra añejo gets a hold of you, it's just the best drink of liquor on the planet. So, yeah. And the transition wasn't even that slow. And I walked past one of the biggest scotch collections on the planet, and most of it given to me, but they gave me it all the fucking time. And I don't even need any more. I give it to, like, thank God I have alcoholic friends that can drink fucking scotch. And so.
Good people.
I at the end of the night, I would just started drinking that extra añejo neat and smoking a cigar, and now it's just all I drink. I don't even like scotch anymore because now my palate's completely adjusted to this extra.
It's ready
añejo
for it, yeah.
Wow.
And nothing else. So I mean, I won't even drink other tequilas. So I will go back to scotch if I can't get mine.
Right. I used to drink rather heavily, and I only twice in my life had tequila that like tasted good that I wanted to drink it, and that's just because I couldn't afford to buy it myself. So I was drinking with a rich guy who was like, "Oh, you got to drink this." But I guess it's like you said, like most of them, it's like 300 plus for a bottle of it. So, and most of the time when I was drinking it, it was really cheap, and I was just trying to get as lit as possible.
Right.
Which I think serves a good purpose.
Oriented. Yeah, yeah, there you go.
That's good.
I had my eye on the prize, and I got there.
Good God!
Now, did someone said you're on Roadies now? Is that
Roadies is a Showtime show, a new series that debuted Sunday night.
Okay, and that's a Cameron Crowe thing.
Cameron Crowe, J.J. Abrams, Winnie Holtzman. If you don't know who Winnie is, she's the one you wouldn't know out of that, but she's one of the best writers in Hollywood.
Yeah, I was gonna say she's killer.
Very, very. Famous, she did the stage adaptation of what is it? The Wizard of Oz. What was it called?
The Wiz.
No, but that's not right. It was
Wicked.
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 Yeah,
oh,
Wicked.
Okay.
Yeah, Wicked. That's right. But she's also created some sitcoms that. Yeah. I can't remember the name of, but she's amazing. And
yeah, I know that name.
Too.
Definitely have seen that name around. Because especially a woman writer, people are like, "Oh, this one's good."
Yeah, yeah.
We let this one talk. You know that. Kind of thing.
is this? Have you regularly been on other like shows like that?
You did Sex in the City. I remember that.
Yeah, I do. I do little bitty things that if they fit my schedule, but I won't cancel a show. And I was in Horrible Bosses, and they offered me a bigger part in Horrible Bosses 2, and I told them no because I had to cancel a gig. And they're like, "You got to be kidding!
So
you don't want to?" No, I don't. Sorry.
That's what. Yeah,
it's not a better role. It's just bigger. It's the same fucking thing, only more of it. And why the fuck would I?
And when that came out, you've already got a fan base, and it's not like you're going to be able to sell more tickets because you were in Horrible Bosses too.
Right. So I told
them
no.
Do that.
So and then it's not important to me. And then I did a movie with Billy Bob Thornton called Jane Mansfield's Car that was great, and he wrote a part for me in it and didn't know me.
Really?
And,
just he's a fan.
Saw a comedy.
A fan.
Wow, amazing!
And great cast: Robert Duvall, John Hurt,
wow,
Kevin Bacon.
That's heavy hitters.
The guy, and there's more to Kathleen Lanassa, the guy that played the nemesis in RoboCop 2. I can't remember his name. I can't remember.
I was thinking of Peter Weller. I went the wrong way.
But it was great.
He was
great fun.
RoboCop.
Yeah, he was RoboCop.
Yeah.
He wasn't the bad guy.
Yeah,
no, he wasn't. I used to see him in church all the time.
John Patrick.
Patrick?
Is it John Patrick? Yeah. Patrick. Yeah, John Patrick.
I believe you. I'll take your word for it. One, I didn't see RoboCop 2. And then two.
Right. You're, it doesn't matter.
I think it's stuff like that.
It doesn't matter. So I did that, and I worked real hard on that. And then I did a series for HBO that was written and directed by Linda Bloodworth Thomason, who's also a big... she did every episode of Designing Women, created it, wrote every one of them. And would write, she'd be writing two scenes ahead of what's being shot. And that's the way she created it. And
wow.
So, it was called 12 Miles of Bad Road, and it was a story about Texas billionaires and just over the top fucking show. It was greenlit by Chris Albright, who was the head of HBO at the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they spent $28 million on 7 episodes of it, and then the writer's strike came. Albright slaps his girlfriend in Vegas. Yeah, yeah. They fire him. Yeah. They hire this other guy from Harvard, a gay guy, and he doesn't like our gay guy. He says that it's Leslie Jordan. Leslie fucking Jordan, yeah. Who's funny as fuck. And he goes, he doesn't represent the gay community. Well, he'll suck your dick. What do you want? We're fucking gay guys, dude.
That's pretty representative.
Yeah, right there.
Fits all the qualifications, yeah.
Holy shit.
You know, and if it was a failure, it would be his failure. But if it was a success, it would have been somebody else's success. And he just did the ballless, soulless fucking thing and
cut it.
That's
so
crazy.
None of it saw the light of day. We really worked on it for a long fucking time.
They spent millions of dollars and then buried it.
But to go against Albrecht to me is crazy because he put The Sopranos on HBO. He put HBO on the map, basically.
Yeah,
he was the guy.
And that show was good, too.
That's why I'm sitting like, how did I never see this? But that's why they put it away.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah, and it was good.
Yeah.
But he's a dick, and he's still there.
Yeah, I know. I know, yes.
I actually stole a line from Hicks in a newspaper interview I was doing in Canada. And so I thought, surely they're not going to repeat this. But I was drunk, too, and it just happened. And I called him a ballless, soulless sucker of Satan's cock, which is something I heard Hicks say one time. And boy, they sure printed it. And,
put that out there immediately.
Yeah, right.
Well, this is going to go viral.
We got a call from their PR department asking about it. And I said, well, just tell them this, is that I don't want to be... I don't want anybody to misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm saying he has no balls and he has no soul. And if you opened up his stomach, you would find the black worm jism of Satan. That's what I'm saying. That's all I'm trying to say.
Let me clarify that.
That's what I was going for. So I don't know if you understood it from the beginning or not, but that's it.
Would you guys ever retry to sell that somewhere, or was it contractually to HBO and couldn't?
They own it, and they would.
As long as he's there.
Didn't spend the $28 million they did.
Right.
And they won't sell it to somebody else. They don't want it to be somebody else's hit. And
oh, right.
And these were billionaires. So the sets, and they were all their homes. So these are billionaire kitchens, which are nothing like millionaire kitchens. They're billionaire kitchens.
I've seen millionaire kitchens. Yeah, they're
Yeah, right. The billionaire kitchens or something else. My character was Spain Dixon Dollarhide. And my great-grandfather invented barbed wire. And I'm one of the richest Texans alive. And single. And
now I'm up.
And I have a $50 million jet. And I take chicks to fucking Corpus from Dallas for fucking shrimp. And they're framing me to be a TV star. I mean, they're framing me up close with Catherine doing these great shots, and my dialogue was great. I had a killer acting coach, and I was putting some great stuff on film, and I'm like, oh, this is just perfect. Fuck, really?
Taken away.
Wow. Yeah, because that's a perfect, just the way you're describing it and what you look like perfect for you. That's a perfect description.
And I gave so much authenticity to the show because I'm just so Texan.
Right.
Everybody else is just trying to act like
pretending they're Texas. Right?
Pretending they're Texas. I would be pretending. But that's wow, that's amazing. I hope somebody didn't just fall down the steps, but we'll see what happens. I can't believe that it went nowhere.
Yeah.
That's so awful. There's probably so many great shows that just get buried like that. But to hear that, because that had to be, 12 years ago? 15, maybe?
Maybe even less.
Well, I was living in Montecito, so it had to be, maybe 12 years ago.
Yeah, because it's Chris Albert. I mean, my first ex-fiance. I used to work with him.
Yeah, and I'm horrible with dates, names,
car
keys,
anything
you have to find or think about.
That's hilarious. You think your career would have taken a completely different turn had that gone out?
You were already pretty famous at that point.
Yeah, I was a famous comedian.
Yeah, you were already up there, but I mean,
but I'm not famous like like you know, all the guys that were on television. So that's my my fame never came from that. It always came from stand-up comedy only.
Right.
And so I'm it's easier for me to move around than it is for, you know, Ray Romano or Kevin James or any of those guys.
That's like Bill Burr. He says that. My stand-up comes first. My stand-up is the most important thing. I mean,
did you have, was it part of your desire to be an actor, or was it just to be a stand-up?
No, just to be a stand-up.
See, I love that.
Wow.
It never was a waste, a means to an end. It was always what I wanted to do. So I never had it. And quite frankly, if this show doesn't get picked up, I won't do another one.
Yeah.
I won't do television again.
Oh, the road. Yeah, it is a lot of work.
Oh, that's, it's amazingly hard to do. And but in the history of stand-up comedy, I love what I've achieved.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give that up for any fucking body.
Yeah.
And but in the history of acting, I haven't done dipshit fucking thing. So I think I'll give that one up before I give up this one.
Yeah,
so
we'll let that
and people at my agents are all like, "Yeah, but you guys are, you got a brass ring," and I'm like, "I've already got a fucking brass ring, dude. You think I'm going to put this one down to try for another one? That's pretty stupid."
Part of what drives me crazy is I honestly think 95% of comedians now just think it's basically showcasing to be an actor.
Yeah, they milk it.
And like people talk about, like, well, you know, if I can just get successful enough, and they're talking solely about acting on something, then, you know, I probably wouldn't do comedy anymore.
Yeah.
I just don't understand that mentality.
I've seen that.
Where it's like, I feel like no matter what.
They won't be very good at anything then.
Probably. Yeah.
But what the fuck do I know? I don't know anything.
These are like silly questions that we came up with, but a quick question. Like, have you ever gone on stage drunk? Is that a silly question for me to ask you?
Yeah, that's pretty fucking silly.
I was going to say.
I just noticed it, and I'm like, this would be a great question.
I've gone on stage where I'd go out and see where the feature act was in his show, see how close I was going on. And I couldn't get the two images of him within fucking 20 feet of each other. I mean, just trying to suck them together. And I
cross
just can't
eyes.
Do it. I mean, not without closing a fucking eye. And it was like four sometimes. And I shut my eye just down to get them down to two. And they were pretty close to each other. Yeah, I've been drunk on this stage before. So, yeah, I still go on buzz. But but I've tried to be careful about it. A little bit.
That's amazing to me.
I don't either.
No,
I'm just fucking with you.
Yeah, you're like, I don't give a shit. I'll fall off the stage. I went on stage once, two drinks. I'm a lightweight. I'm 100% Irish. I don't know what happened. Something got messed up. So I go on stage, two drinks, and I almost fell off the stage. And you know, like how I don't know how people go up.
I used to go up high, and pretty drunk. I pretty much went both all the time. Until 5 years ago when I quit, and then when I quit drinking, there was a solid 3 months where I just didn't even know how to perform the same. Like, I just didn't get any joy out of it because I was so used to having at least 3-4 drinks before I went up there. And then I kept smoking. I started smoking more when I quit drinking, and when I stopped smoking pot, like 2 or 3 years ago, for a solid 6 months, everyone was like, "Your comedy's really mean." And I was just up there just raging, just so mad. Just like, you know what? Screw this. Fuck these people. And then people were like, "It's funny, but you're really mean now." And then I had to really figure out how to tone it down, to like go up there sober and not just want to destroy every person in the audience.
Wanted to drink?
So do you not drink anymore?
Yeah. I'm a type 1 diabetic. And when I found out, my doctor was like, "You got to quit drinking." He said, "How often do you drink?" And I was like, "Well, anytime I perform." He's like, "How often do you perform?" I'm like, "Every night."
He was like, that's it.
Yeah.
About right.
He was like, "You got to quit doing that because you need your organs for other things now."
Right.
And it was pretty devastating for me. People would come up to me for like a year or 2 years and be like, "It's weird not seeing you with a beer in your hand." I'd be like, "Don't bring it up. It's a sore subject
for me.
So but, is Zach still pretty mean, or are you getting over it, or
I'm kind of past it now. I mean, my act's kind of mean.
He's
in general.
Likeable mean.
Yeah, I like to think of it as charmingly offensive.
Ah,
but since I quit smoking pot, I've gotten a lot quicker. My mind, I guess, has gotten clearer. And I would always smoke right before I went up.
That's what I do here.
Yeah.
I'll go out there and those fucking kids in the back, the fucking young comics will get me so fucking stoned I can't see. And
yeah.
Hey, Ron White. Oh, God damn. I wonder what it would be like.
And everything's so goddamn dark in there. How do you get out of the seat?
Yeah, right.
You just follow the people's heads.
There's a gap in the heads, yeah.
That's amazing. Like, I wouldn't know what to do. Drunk. Have you ever been on too drunk?
Yeah,
Yeah,
if I can't pull the two images of the guy within 20
right.
feet
yeah.
of each other, that's probably too fucked up to perform.
I at one point I lived in Manhattan Beach and my drinking got so bad, and I was here so often, I said I got to move within walking distance of the Comedy Store, otherwise I'm going to get a DUI and fuck things up. Money I don't have. So I moved like a block and a half away from here, and then that increased the amount that I would drink. And so maybe like a week after I moved to West Hollywood, my roommate and I bought a bottle of like Belvedere vodka or some sort of fancy vodka that he drank, and we just got lit up. And then I came up here, went on stage, and I had to follow Pauly Shore. And
yes.
I was so hammered and so I just generally didn't like him as a human being that I went up after him and just did like a solid 6 minutes just talking shit. While he just stood in the back of the room at his mom's club, and like I just kept hearing my roommate laughing and the rest of the crowd just very uncomfortable, like, what is he doing?
You don't shit.
He knows
on
he's still here. And I got off stage, probably like, bro, no more drinking before you go on stage. I was like, fuck you, I'll fight you in the back.
Good like, move, dude. Yeah. So you were stupid also.
Yeah.
Well, okay,
he's young,
good.
Yeah, it was I made a lot of good decisions. I used to get real drunk and just imitate the guy who goes up second here every night.
Do you know Argus Hamilton?
I know who he is, yeah.
You know of him, yeah. Well, he's like a staple here.
Yeah.
And he goes on at 9:15, and Ricky does an amazing impression of him.
And I used to do it, I would just get drunk, and then I'd just spend the rest of the night walking around as if I were him. And people would just encourage it. They'd be like, oh, hey, Argus, what are you doing? And the gag was that I always thought it was like 1986.
Yeah.
And it was like whoever was there, I just act like I was referencing people from that era. And it was one of those things where I got to go on tour with Dice because Dice thought it was so funny that I'm, referencing.
I made him do Argus the whole weekend.
It was intense. I got really drunk and high with Robin Williams because I saw him in the hallway. And I walked up and I just said, hey, Robin, the Todd's looking for you. He owes you. He said you owe him $1,800 for that cocaine. The look on Rob Williams' face was like,
Argus?
He just goes, how do you know who I bought cocaine from in the 80s? Well, I said, well, because he's pissed as hell and I ain't getting any blow until you pay up. And then he was like, loved it. He followed me around all night, just like asking me questions. I kept telling, no one's going to buy this crap sitcom about the alien. He's like, Argus, it's been off the air for 20 years. It was really popular. No one's buying it. It's garbage.
My favorite was that he always kept Argus drunk, even though Argus has been
sober for so long.
So, like 17 years or something like that. Did you ever perform in front of Mitzi?
No.
Never once?
I don't think so.
Wow. Oh, you'd know it. Yeah, because she would stop you. I mean, she would talk to you. She's like, she would love you. I know she would love you. I was her personal assistant for like 6 years. So I know like that this would be her.
Yeah, she liked real comics. So.
Yeah, she could see through bullshit and people hated her for it. Like if you were a rogue comic and you come in and do your little dance, she'd be like, go away. You're already developed. I don't need it. You know, she loved the realness of comics. Like that really, not phony.
If she thought you were just imitating someone.
Right. Sometimes she'd take the wrong pills and bring in some crazies, but.
Yeah. I mean, she made a lot of bad decisions. It's just she had the luck of being on the Sunset Strip and all the good decisions walked in.
That's true. Right. Yeah, because, I mean, you were already established when you came here in the 90s, so it was, were the other comics here like, oh, good, Ron White's here, or were they like,
no,
fuck
not
this.
Then.
Okay.
Not then.
Why? Because they didn't know you or they were pissed that you were taking their time, stage time?
Well, I didn't start taking anybody's stage time. Number one, I call in for my sets.
Which is awesome.
Which I don't bump people off.
Yeah.
I also do my time when I'm here. I don't go long, not 1 minute long.
Yeah, it's great.
And because I have respect the other guys. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, something that I fucking used to stick in my craw when I would do sets. So I try not to do it. And
which is rare. It is extremely rare. So many, especially someone at your level coming in here generally would do 45, not be on the lineup.
Right.
And then just get off stage and expect people to be like, oh, yeah. I'm so glad I got bumped for an hour and a half.
Right.
Yeah, and you'd have to sit and wait. Or sometimes like Mooney would do like 2 hours.
When I showed up, it was Eddie Griffin. Eddie Griffin would do 3 hours. And it was like, it wouldn't even doing comedy. He would just be up there preaching about how amazing he is as a human being. Where like, it wasn't ironic, where it was like, oh, it's funny, he's over bragging. It was just like him lying about how Harvard and Yale begged him to come to college there. And he just told him, fuck no, I'm not going. It was like, what? Nobody what are you talking about? That. That crowd would sit there. It'd be like 12 people from 11 o'clock at night until 2 in the morning. Just 12 people slowly leaving, like uncomfortably, like, are they not going to put anyone else up? Why is this guy talking about Yale and Harvard? I don't understand.
There's no way. Yeah, he was tough. It was a little.
He was pretty crazy by that point. That's what people would say. He used to be great. I'd be like,
he is great. Right. He's still a terrific performer. He's a very funny guy. I mean, you can't take that away from him, but he was a little nutty. He would go long.
I'll take it away right now.
Yeah, I see. I feel you, Rick. But wait, now, did you, you said the comics weren't, like, took a liking to you? They didn't at all?
Not that comics have always liked me.
Because they're kind of competitive and they can be assholes.
Yeah, but they're not competitive with that. They're number one, they're not my competitors.
There you go.
They're not taking. They're not going to take the Radio City Music Hall because of something that happened, you know.
Right.
So they're not my competitors. And I do have a good reputation with comics. And I quite frankly don't know how they feel. But they seem to. I mean, I've never heard anybody say anything shitty about me. And, good.
Yeah, me
even
either.
On the fucking internet. I mean,
no, it's true because
And a lot of people come up to me to talk shit about people because
they know
you'll jump on.
Yeah. But I've never heard anyone say anything negative about you. Even like when you showed up, everyone was like, "Ron White's coming in." It was like everyone was genuinely excited. Like. That's a legit comic that's performing at the Comedy Store, not we're bringing in, you know, Joe Schmo, who is on TV but has done 6 years of comedy part-time.
Yeah, right. That's exciting.
Okay. But he's on NBC, so let's bring him in.
He goes up and just gives you his IMDb, tells you about the shows he's on. The crowd's like, he's famous. Yay.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
No, not whatever it takes. I get pissed off at stuff like that. And I think comics do too. Comics, like, that's what I was going to ask. Like, because you were such an established comic, were they pissy to you? But I guess they weren't.
I don't know. If they were, I didn't notice. And,
you
and
said in the 90s, maybe.
In the 90s, I didn't come here in the 90s.
How long have you been L.A. based?
I've just lived in L.A. for 7 months.
Oh, okay.
Shut it. Really?
Yeah. I lived in Montecito. I never came down here and did sets. And
Montecito?
And,
that's great.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think nobody's ever given me the vibe except for the opening act tonight.
Well, that's the improv. That's not us. No, I'm just kidding. No, shit on the improv.
That's the open micer.
I'm going to go find him.
I'm going to help you find this little shit.
He's giving you shit tonight, but tomorrow he's going to be all over Twitter going, yeah, I did shows with Ron White last night. He loved my act. And we're best buds now.
He told me he cried. He's laughing so hard. He would have taped his ribs.
But that's the thing. Like, these people don't care that they go up and do a shitty set. I would give my left arm to do a spot at the improv. You know what I mean? And they give it to people that don't give a shit.
Every time
or
I get
maybe
the spot
he answers
there,
the phones
late.
There during the day. I don't know. I don't have
any answers.
Get some
right, what else you
answers.
Got, honey?
What other questions do we have for him, Ricky? Let's. What do you think?
Well, what's the roadies thing? What do you play on that? What's your?
I play a guy named Phil, and I'm the road manager sort of, but I'm the rock fucking god of truth. I know more about rock and roll than anybody alive. I'm the best road manager that ever lived. And if if everything's going right, you can't tell that I'm doing anything. But if everything's going wrong, nobody can fix it but me. Okay. And there's not very many of me in the world. So, and I'm a really flawed human being, and I've killed two people.
Yes.
Okay. But I'm also really fucking loyal to the people that work for me.
Right.
And I'm really most into teaching them a future in this business. And and if people try to take advantage of them, I'm a big defender.
You'll take them down.
So that's who I am. And
is that something, did you audition for that, or is that something they approached you with? And they were like, listen, this part is great for you. Yeah,
they came looking for me.
That's great.
But I still auditioned for it. But
oh, yeah, they made you come in and audition. But still, it doesn't matter. They wrote it probably with you in mind.
Yeah, that's what Cameron said.
Ooh, that's what Cameron said.
Hell yeah, he's great. He's one of my favorite directors. So
he's a great guy. If there was anything else you would do aside from stand-up, what would it be? And don't say act, because obviously not. You're not into it.
No, I wouldn't even, I've done this for 30 years, and I've done 11,000 live shows, I can't even
there
think.
Was no
if
other
I
path.
Wasn't doing this, I would retire, I can quit whenever I want to.
So you're over your 10,000 miles.
Yeah.
Oh, what is that called? 10,000 hours?
I'm sure he's well past 10,000 hours.
I'm very proud of you to get past your 10,000 hours.
Did you, when you were starting out, what did you have to do? Did you have a crap job and when you were still in Texas?
I sold windows and doors, I came up with the Funny Bone. They had 21 clubs. So as soon as I did this big gig that I opened for Sam Kennison, and it was a remake show, and Carl LeBove was in rehab again. There were people that were there from the improv, and people there from the Punchline, and I murdered. Couldn't have hit them harder with a fucking bat. Bill Kennison was over there, and right before the show, he said, "Listen, Sam's opening act is a sacrificial lamb, so they're going to start yelling." They came to see Sam. They don't give a fuck about you. So if it doesn't go well, just try to do your time. Sam's not even here yet. So I don't have very much time, and I only found out about it that day.
Oh,
so
shit.
So they called and told me to come down there. So it's just me and my brother-in-law today, who was the bartender in the club I started in, and started doing stand-up.
Wow.
About 8 months later, 6 months later. And I'm sure he really hoped I'd never start fucking his sister.
But, I'm positive.
But anyway,
shit happens.
You know, the Punchline and the Funny Bone together booked up my ear.
They set you up
and as a feature act, and so I took off down the road in my little Nissan truck, and
That's lucky, because you started at a club that was already a chain. You know what I mean? Like people start here, and we can only go to La Jolla, and then that's it. You know what I mean? There is no.
This is the stupidest place to do stand up for somebody that doesn't.
You
have
mean
a
LA?
Name. Yeah, LA is a ridiculously stupid place to start doing stand up. Unless there are just way more places to perform than this. I mean,
there are, but they're not like what you said. Like you got a kind of a career out of it, if you will. I mean, maybe it wasn't a giant lucrative career, but it was, you were still doing what you loved.
Yeah.
Making money.
Well, after 3 years, I was headlining small rooms.
Ow.
And so I came up real quick. And so then I was making $1,300 a week. And then that went up to maybe eventually a couple grand a week in air.
You also paid more.
So I never really understood this, because all I ever knew was that, you could do comedy,
you tour
make
around.
A living,
yeah.
and tour around and do comedy clubs. I didn't know that what was out here.
Right.
I knew that I went out there and it didn't do very well. And I realized right away that all the fucking stage time is in the Midwest. And you should, if comics would ask me for advice, I'd tell them, move to St. Louis, that's where the Funny Bone is.
St. Louis.
Fucking, that's where they're
centered, started. Yeah.
That's where they're at. and suck up to those fucking guys because they can put you on the road making a goddamn living.
That's amazing.
I started in Kansas City and at Stanford and Sons, and with the crazy Glazier brothers, and through people I met there, I did like I basically just did mini tours around there for a couple years, in Omaha and Oklahoma City and Tulsa and Little Rock and shit like that, and everywhere I went, it was a struggle to get any stage time because all those clubs, like I'd be going there do an opening for the weekend or whatever, and it was like they had their five guys that they booked for everything other than the headliner. It was like they did a favor, someone canceled, and that's how I'd get in there. And then it'd be cool, they'd bring me back, but it'd be basically just be like, well, we have our guys. It was so frustrating. I moved out here when I was young because I couldn't get any stage time worth a while back there. It basically cost me money to do comedy. But
so if,
I never got in St. Louis. That's I wish someone would have told me
saying?
That.
Oh, okay. You never thought about going there? Or
they just never booked me. Like I think they had their local guys that they...
Yeah, well, you'd have to move there and start doing open mic for nothing and,
right.
and come up in one of their rooms. And
yeah.
So I'm lucky that one of the owners, one of the two owners lived in Dallas. So I was kind of his find. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the people came from St. Louis, and so...
And there's still Funny Bones. Like, there's still everywhere.
Still a bunch of them.
Yeah. So your advice to young comics would be?
Start there?
Yeah. I would go someplace that there's a lot of... You know, you need access to comedy clubs, I would think. Because I would say don't come up here. I mean, I just made $35
and, so proud
I've been
of
doing
you.
This 30 fucking years. So
what about that $15 you made in the original room?
I didn't. Nobody gave it to me. I've never made any money here.
Oh, they probably have checks in the office for you.
No.
You probably got a stack of checks worth about $140.
Jesus Christ.
That's for 2 years of work. That's amazing. But New York, you can make money. Like, there's so many comedy clubs there. Would you tell comics to go there? Stay out of L.A.?
You know, I hate the clubs in New York.
Really?
Yeah,
me too.
I just don't like them. They are
small.
Pretentious, well, also, pretentious comedy.
Whenever I would go there, I would be, you know, doing a Letterman set, and so I'd have to stick to it so they could time it. So there, and we'd also go in early, and there'd be nobody there, and I couldn't get off my set to fuck with these people and try to wake them the fuck up. And
right.
And then the guy that I was with, he didn't give a fuck. He just wanted to time it. So.
And, right.
So he did just say, leave room for laughter. And I'm like, all right.
Leave room for laughter. That's
so
amazing.
Then when you do Letterman, it's a fucking tourist from the fucking Midwest. So they howl like fucking hyenas.
Loving it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How many times did you do Letterman or Leno or both? Did you ever do Carson?
I never did Carson.
Way back to Carson.
I did Leno a couple of times and Letterman a couple of times. And then I realized it doesn't fucking matter. You don't need it anymore. You used to, that could really change your fucking career.
Yeah.
But Jake Johansson's been done Letterman 22 times or something like that. He can't sell one fucking ticket anywhere.
Wow.
And it just doesn't matter. Not enough people watch it.
Especially now, there's too much.
It's not comedy fans watching it, for sure.
And so,
you get more famous on YouTube.
Yeah. So it's not worth it. And to me, so I don't chase it down. And
no, it's not. I mean, but I thought like Letterman and Leno were a little bit more. Definitely Carson, because there was only four channels back then.
Yeah, that was
so
huge.
Yeah, you could go on the road for 2 years. But Letterman and Leno had a little bit of clout. But then I had friends doing it, like, say, 7 years ago, and then they would get more famous from doing Chelsea Lately.
That's the younger comedy fans.
Yeah.
My little sister, she's a freshman in college, and she just sent me a text earlier today that was like, just watch this comedian, he's so funny, do you ever do shows with him? And I looked at the name, I'm like, I've never heard of this guy. So I look him up, and he's apparently a YouTube star.
Giant YouTube.
And everyone loves him. He's got like 130 million hits on YouTube over his videos, and most of them are like him singing a crazy song and like making crazy faces. I was just like, oh my God. I don't know
what
to say. Yeah, that's what they're doing now.
I had this opening act one time in San Antonio, and this kid, he was a really good looking kid, and he had a keyboard that he would burp into and do his different family members burping song, and he had a can of Silly String And he would act like Spider-Man coming on the crowd. That was one of his big jokes. Okay. And he's killing too. And I was like, fuck, really, dude. And he was probably the middle acts having a hard time following him. So I don't know. A few days into it, he goes, well, I have a lot of respect for you. And I was just wondering what you thought about my show. And I said, I think you should get some knee cymbals. And he's like, what? And I said, yeah, knee cymbals. What you could do is you put the knee cymbals on, and then as you're playing your little keyboard burp thing and shooting your stilly swing, you could bang your knees together at the same time.
Did he do it?
Huh? No. He
was aware that you were mocking him.
Yeah, he was then. He caught on. And he goes, you don't like my Spider-Man bit? I'm like, dude, I don't like your whole fucking act.
it's not the Spider-Man bit. That's just a small part of the problem.
Yeah, I haven't dissected it into little pieces.
Do you bring your own like feature opener on the road with you?
Of course.
Because then you like to have control over it. Like, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And it's your friends usually. Yeah.
No, I know it.
They don't have acts. Well, I guess I have to bring my act.
That's true. Yeah. Like, because they don't have
house MCs anything like that. But
sometimes in theaters, they'll be like, oh, we have so-and-so. We can put him on.
No, that actually never happens.
Do you do Live Nation? Ever.
Huh?
Live Nation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who do you take on the road with you? Comics we know, or
Josh Blue.
Oh yeah,
goes on the road with me a lot, and Vic Henley from New York, and via Alabama, and Alex Raimundo, my brother-in-law, does a lot of them with me.
Oh, he's a stand-up.
Yeah, he started stand-up right after I did.
That's amazing.
How long did you know him before you and his sister became?
A long fucking time.
Really?
A long time. Yeah. He.
That's so awkward.
I've known him for. You know, literally the first time I walked into a comedy club ever to do 4 minutes, I was nervous as shit, and I walked straight to the bar and ordered a beer and a shot of tequila, and he handed me the beer and the shot of tequila.
Damn.
And now I'm married to his sister, and we own a tequila company together.
That's so great.
And
full circle.
And I toured the fucking country together in either my piece of shit truck or his piece of shit truck.
That's amazing.
And he was the opener, and I was the feature. And we called it the Joy to the World Tour, and we had rules, man. We were like, if somebody lights a joint, you have to smoke it no matter what.
Nice.
And you drive a tank of gas, I drive a tank of gas. You cannot fall asleep while the other person's driving, or you can burn them. And,
okay.
And
this is legit brotherhood.
Yeah,
it sounds like
right. This is fucking.
This isn't like some guy
and having to win. And we had a fucking blast. We loved it. We town in every fucking town we went to. We were. You know, we were partying like fucking rock stars, we thought, and on a limited budget, but with free drinks and all the places. And so
the benefits of comedy.
Pretty fucking good.
Free drinks is the big benefit.
And I was getting more pussy than I'd ever gotten. And
your brother-in-law was witnessing
that. Well, he wasn't. They weren't brother-in-laws yet.
Wasn't my brother-in-law.
No, he wasn't, but he was witnessing.
Oh, he got. Oh, my brother-in-law is so fucking good looking. He got more pussy.
He's single?
No, God, no, he's not.
Oh, no.
It's hard to tell sometimes.
And then when you said when you opened for Kinison, was your interaction with Kinison good or bad? Was he mad that you were crushing?
No, fuck no. He didn't even know. He wasn't even there. He wasn't there when I came off stage. And I'm like, well, whatever. And this was a makeup date. And so I just went back to my dressing room. They had a little six-pack of beer and an ice chest, and then all of a sudden he showed up, and there was 15 people backstage, and then he had a dressing suite with a big lobster tray and shit. As soon as they got there, his bodyguard came up to get me and take me back to Sam. And he had a dressing suite, so he had another room back there. So all these people are eating his food, and he takes me back there, and it's just him and a hooker.
Okay.
He's banging a fucking big vial of blow, and it's got a rock in the top of it. He can't get it out. He's just fucking working on it. And he looks up and he goes, "Heard you killed him, cowboy." And I go, "Yeah, Sam, it was a great crowd. You're gonna have a good time." He goes, "How about a cup of coffee?" I said, Yeah, okay. All right. I'll do it. So he made these two big lines, and when we did them, and he faked a heart attack. And the only person that believed it was me. And I was about to start sucking his fucking face.
Because
he was one of my heroes, too. And then he just jumped up, and he goes, let me show you how to do this. And went out there and fucking murdered. He was back then when he was still murdering.
He was
still crushing it. Oh, my God.
Thunder bumps with Kinnison. Now that's an exciting time.
That is a story. That is an amazing. He'd probably wake him up in here. They say he haunts here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't believe it, but because I think it would be a lot funnier in here.
Yeah, the haunting.
The haunting
his
would
possession
be
of comics
things.
Would
yeah.
be a lot. Louder and funnier, probably.
Plus, he didn't die here.
Yeah.
But he was always on the stage. That was one of Mitzi's babies. That was her favorite. So.
I think we're at time. So I appreciate you doing it, man.
Unbelievable.
It was so exciting.
Thank you so much.
It was great having you. Is there anything you want to promote currently? Shows
or
anything?
We have a lot of fans.
You can, go to tatersalad.com. You'll know more about me than I do.
All right, great. And
I've
never
done it.
Tater salad.
And what night did you say Roadies is
Sundays.
On?
Sunday night. For 10 weeks. Or
what are they, 10 o'clock? Or they're right
o'clock.
After Ray Donovan?
Yeah, right after Ray Donovan.
That's a smart, great slot because it's like an easy...
What?
Good one. On, so.
It's a good one. I'm going to watch it. I have it DVR'd.
What was it that you said Rogan and they were busted on me about
No, it wasn't
being,
Rogan. It was Bert Kreischer. And Doug Stanhope, they were Googling your self-worth. First, they were saying, let's go.
My self-worth or my net worth?
I mean, your net worth. Oh, my God, your self-worth. Listen to me. This is my insecurities coming out.
Ron White's self-worth is.
This is the thing they did to me. They Googled me, and it came up nothing. And I was like, I would have told you. I have nothing. I'm just nothing, whatever. But then they Googled Doug, and he was at 500,000. And then they Googled you, and it said 10 million. And Doug was like, well, it's all debt. It's not like he owes anything. It's all debt. He's
I also hope it's
Royces.
Really, really wrong.
Yeah, that's what he said. They were saying it's so bad, but then he told the story about you having a Rolls Royce on the back of your RV. And I was like, no, he didn't. He said, yes, he did. He said he toured with it, and he pulled out a Rolls Royce.
No, that was a different story.
Yeah,
but
you can tell that if you want. That was funny. No, you don't want to.
That's all right. I got to get home. All
right, that made me laugh.
Thanks, guys.
So, anyway,
thanks, Ron.
All right, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
Be careful going up there. All right.
Thanks for listening, guys. Come to the Comedy Store. Watch a show. I'm Rick Ingram.
Eleanor Kerrigan.
Thanks, guys.